I mean, that is pretty deep. So, do you think... Well, no, no, all of life is ad libbing.
All of life is ad libbing.
Except if you're an actor.
No, that's just double ad libbing.
Is it, though?
Ad libbing, pretending to ad lib.
Wow. Meta.
Meta. All right, let's do this.
Okay, you're up.
Okay, come in.
We're already rolling.
Well then, welcome to the last episode of the TGM, That Guy's a Modcast podcast, DS. Your video games podcast about news, reviews, and previews with myself, Kunzi11, and my co-host, Richie Cunningham. Say hello, Richie.
Hi, Farley. How's it going?
Good. Now, where can you find our content?
Our content can be found on www.thatguys.co.uk. It can also be found on all of the socials at thatguysamaniac, all one word, all lowercase.
Yes, that's right, Richie. I'm just checking to see when the last post was on the podcast. Oh, not too bad. 12 days ago. This season has been themed on the DS, so we've had episodes on dragons, dice, scores, sequences, singles, sleep, scary, etc. Taking inspiration from the Nintendo DS. Many of the titles which released had a subtitle with a D and an S in it, such as Mario Kart DS.
Dual Circuit? No, Dual... Did Mario Kart DS mean anything?
No, just DS.
Just DS?
Yeah.
So it didn't have a surtitle?
Didn't have a subtitle, same as Tetris DS.
Oh, okay. That's a bit disappointing.
Yeah, they could have...
Okay, I challenge you, Farley. To top your ad-libbing skills, to come up with a good Mario Kart DS. Start out.
Mario Kart Dunlop Shredding.
That's quite good. Dunlop Shredding. Driving Simulator.
Yeah, okay. I can see why they didn't.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the season, we wrote down 2,168 D words and 54 S words, put them into two separate bags, and then we would randomize the contents of each episode, as you know by now if you've been listening all along. So to round off the season, this is it. This is the end. No more after this season. There'll be another season soon. Richie, for the last time, rummage the D's.
Rummaging through the D's. Couldn't find a bag, so I'm actually flicking through some post-it notes. and there we go. There's a great big D. I've got both my hands around it. It's destruction.
Destruction. I've got a big bag of S's here. Here's I'm rummaging.
Is that clicking your mouse?
I've only got a pen.
No pen.
No rustling things.
I'm so annoyed.
Ooh, it's sequence.
Oh, man.
So what does that make our episode? That guy's the main at the podcast, DS. Destruction sequence. Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh.
Ooh. Now, this episode, we're going to do what we said we would do right at the beginning and then promptly forgot. Which is to workshop and talk about those concepts as they relate to video games. And we'll have a break in the middle. So, destruction. Richie, what does that bring to mind when we think about video games?
So,
the word destruction.
The word destruction brought to mind. We need an editor. We need an editor. Somebody who actually cuts all of my nonsense out.
It brought to mind... Interesting.
It brought to mind a thing that is very close to your heart.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. Any more body parts in this?
And that is digital curation. And I was just thinking about some of the things, because we have discussed it before on the podcast, but yeah. Like when a console reaches the point where it is no longer available, destroyed, it's a tenuous link. I wanted to ask you a few questions around that and get your thoughts on digital curation.
Okay.
So, is it sad when a console dies? As in, so let's say, for instance, you had a PS2.
Yeah.
You've had it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's no longer being made. You can't get a PS2 except maybe in like CEX or something like that. You've got a bunch of games and your memory cards, you know, and all that. You can't play your PS2 anymore. Is it sad or is it, oh, thank God I can move on to something new?
Well, I think it, so this is obviously such a hot topic at the moment as streaming services, music libraries, video game companies are just turning the switch off of things which are no longer profitable or updating things out of existence. And people are quite rightly unhappy that the stuff they no longer own and the stuff that they owned. And there's a big community of people online who are super into physical collections, and then there are companies which cater to that, so like limited run games, for example, which, you know, release new SNES games in limited edition physical versions, etc., etc., etc. So it's a really hot topic, but I think what people are really upset about isn't actually the idea of I think there are very few people who are slamming, like, you know, SNES cartridges into their SNES still. There are some people out there doing it, or PlayStation games into their PlayStation. It's just the idea that these things are inaccessible, not just through obsolescence. And I don't know where I sit on the idea, like, so with the Nintendo Switch Online services bringing a weird selection of games to the Switch, I love the idea that I could play through, you know, all the formative Legend of Zelda. No, not Legend of Zelda, bad example. Metroid. You know, I could play the first 5 Mario Kart games, etc. However, you know, is that the proper way to experience it? Is it an emulated version? Should it be on the console? Should it be on a CRT? All this stuff which people get really, really obsessed about.
Yeah.
So what I think is that the real sad bit, in reference to your question, the real sad bit, and I was just having a discussion with somebody who teaches about video games, and they kind of have this problem that other media did not have at all, is she's writing a lecture about, I think it's like emotion and storytelling, and she uses Dragon Age Origins. And she's teaching undergraduates, and she's just had this realization that they were 5 years old when Dragon Age Origins came out, which, you know, is fine. Recommend your students pick up an old game. But these days, it's fucking impossible, or I find it impossible, or very, very difficult, unless you have all the systems in front of you, to check what is playable where. Like, if it's on PC, high chance it's still playable.
Yep, very, very, very high chance.
If it's like
PC games have been really, really good at this.
But if it falls between, you know, if it's one of those weird games that fell between Steam and GOG, and if it was one that was associated with some proprietary thing, maybe you can't. We had that thing a while ago where we tried to play Resident Evil 5 co-op on the PC.
Oh God, yeah, and for some reason only the Steam version doesn't allow co-op.
It is impossible. So that's the thing that makes me really sad, is that, you know, in the same way that, you know, English students will read through some of the classics, for example, there is an issue where, like, oh, yeah, there's, you know, it's not like, I mean, maybe there aren't that many formative texts on the Nintendo DS, for example. But if you wanted to say to people, you know, as part of your, I don't know, video game course or media studies course, go and play Nintendog's Chihuahua edition, that is going to be impossible for most people who weren't alive during that era. So that's what's sad, is that the art, the work, the history, the sequence.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a game that's in a trilogy, if that's inaccessible or is destroyed, I think that's really sad. And we were the generation that bridged all of this. I can imagine if you are a young person now, you're like, oh, you have Tekken 8. I wonder what Tekken 1, 2, 3, and 4 were like, which were released before I was born. Wow, good luck, buddy.
Yeah, and that's another weird one, because Tekken 1, 2, and 3, technically they had console ports. They were originally on arcade machines, you know? So, arcade machines had this weird upgrade and updatability to them as well. You know, some guy would come out to the Namco Bandai thing and he'd put in a new slot or a new chipboard, and that would be an update to Tekken 2, you know, and stuff like that. Crazy. That was actually my second question. Is everything worth preserving, down to the nuances of, hey, this is version 1.113 that only came out in New Zealand, you know?
It's interesting, isn't it? And so the people who are into digital preservation of games can get really obsessed in a way that I think, actually, no, some of this is not worth it, right? So it's like, oh, a lot of the Nintendo people, other people into Nintendo, you know, get obsessed over, we found a ROM of the Space World, Pokemon demo, and in the code it had a hidden reference to a Pokemon which wasn't in the final game, or, you know, here was a Burger King kiosk build of the game. But if you take it to the other extreme, there are people who just collect their favorite series, and there was somebody, again, online, I forget, who's really into Dead or Alive. I think in order to have every version, you have to have something like 15 different, this is on disc, when most things are on disc, 15 different versions of the game, because as you said, you know, this territory had this region had this, got ported to a console, but then the Japan release, the PAL release had something extra on it. Just for a single game, you know, and if you were stupid and picked Resident Evil 2,
So
you could just have an entire collection based on Resident Evil 2 and have 400 different versions of the game. So to try and collect it all is insane. Is everything worth preserving? Again, in theory, but what are we trying to do, or what are we trying to achieve? No one, realistically, nobody is going to put their child through an enforced education program.
No.
Where you have to play through,
I feel your example there is very utopian. I don't think anybody's ever collecting it for future prosperity. I think a lot of people will be collecting it for their own selfish reasons, and specifically when it gets down to the crazy little niche New Zealand version or a specific version that has a bug in it or whatever. They're collecting it probably because, hey, I played that one with the bug in it as a child. I want to have that, you know?
Yeah, there is something bizarre going on. I think a lot of these mega collectors, it's the same with any collecting. It is the same with any collecting. A lot of these mega collectors, it's doing something else. And maybe some of them do have, I'll give my collection to a museum, but, a museum, what is a museum going to do with 4,500 Mario 64 cartridges? It's okay, we'll put one playable out until the N64 dies. But then this is, cynically, video games re-releasing or remakes, right? We're swimming in remakes. I was just looking at my currently playing, and it is all games from the 1990s remade. But then, are we beholden to hoping that something gets a remake or a re-release or a report? I don't know. Part of me, it does think, okay, my PlayStation 2 is dead. why do I bother keeping all these games in the system? I should just get rid of them all.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're a tinkerer, you could probably get the PlayStation 2 working again, or you could probably find a niche company that's making them new again.
I think you can just... because the PlayStation ARM... the PlayStation hardware architecture is very, very emulatable. So you can just stick your PS2 disc in a PC and you'll be able to play it.
Yeah, maybe. The early PS3s were backwards compatible. No, I think, is it every PS3? I don't know, I haven't tried that actually. But my PlayStation 3 is sort of...
Oh no, it was only early ones.
No, I think...
Yeah, it was, because I remember a friend of mine, he had the backward compatibility. His PS3 broke. Yeah. He sent it in and said, oh, we can only give you a new one. He's like, well, how do I play my PS2 games? You can't. Yeah. We don't service this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they're easy to mod. Mm. All of them are easy to mod. Anyway, what was I going to say? There is also something. So one of the reasons why I like the Nintendo Switch is because it's all there and playable. And, you know, I can barely be get asked to get up and turn the console on, let alone change a disc or a cartridge.
Exactly.
So there is something to be said by it. Oh, okay, that got updated or that got re-released. And I'm not too... I mean, there is something nostalgic about having a certain system, a certain controller. So again, with the Switch re-releasing all the old controllers, you know, that is the best way to play the SNES games, is on the SNES pad.
Yep, exactly. And the N64 games, I would argue that they are not good and it's not a good controller, but at the same time, they were designed for it. So Pilotwings, you feel like the same.
I don't think, you know, people should be forced to get a CRT and you know.
No, I don't either. I we've had this discussion before about emulation, and I've played Ocarina of Time, the N64 version, on my PC, but some wonderful person completely revamped everything, so it was all 4K graphics and everything looked pretty, put in like special sunbeams and stuff like that, and like, that's so cool that like somebody has done that, and it was a better game because it was just exactly the same game, it just looked prettier, you know. So there was nothing more there. I also think that, like, with releases and when they came out, say for instance in the PS2, there was a zeitgeist as well, which you just can't capture through curation either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then I think that is part of what should be preserved. So it's not just the physical hardware and the software within it. Obviously, it's, you know, it's stuff like the magazines, interviews and stuff like that.
I'm just talking about like playing games with your mates, like going back and playing Blinky Bill, like like, I don't think I would want it. I can't even remember what game it was, but no, just Shadow of Memories.
Isn't that the Silent Hill on the Wii?
Shadow of Memories. I think it's Shadow of Memories. For
clarity, readers, when we were at university, the PlayStation 2 kind of just come out.
Yeah,
it is Shadow of Memories. And so we spent a lot of time, obviously, in between studying and playing these games, and sitting and watching, playing games, whilst drinking and God knows whatever else. One of those games is Shadow of Memories. But actually, that's probably a perfect example, Richie. I don't think you could fucking play this on anything anymore.
I guarantee you could get an emulated version of it. No worries. Yeah. If you had the physical disc, you just use a PS2 emulator. You'll be fine.
Came out on PSP. Anyway, this wonderful...
Oh, there you go.
Bizarre little game that we had a lot of fun with. And, you know, it's like 7 out of 10 game. I don't think it's never going to get remade. Konami as well. Fuck. I do mourn the death of Konami. Yeah, anyway. Let's move on.
Yeah, but my whole point was there was a zeitgeist around it, and we enjoyed that 7 out of 10 game for what it was. And I mean, you can't preserve that at all. Does it matter? Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe, or maybe, you know, we'll see. We're just starting to see it, and I'm so excited for it. With the, you know, nostalgia and technology, is we're just starting to see retro-looking games move beyond pixel era.
Yeah.
And so I am quite excited for us to kind of have the retro era being early PlayStation days. And, you know, people are... It's only now that some of these really obscure... I was listening to a podcast about somebody talking about the Commodore release of Minder the video game, for example. So these things, you know, do become playable and emulated or remembered, or, you know, people still have original systems. So
yeah,
it's not quite as bleak as you know, if you don't instantly have everything to your fingertips. But what does fuck me off, Richie, is that...
Wow!
Does fuck me off is some of the older consoles in particular still function just fine, and then increasingly the kind of obsolescence cycle is shorter and shorter and shorter. It's like the PlayStation 3 barely functions. You know, who still has a functioning Xbox 360? That's a dwindling number.
I do.
Meanwhile, when was the last time you've whacked it on?
It gets used repeatedly for a DVD player.
Okay. But yeah, you know, Mega Drives and SNESes. And
but yeah, no, I get your point, and I'm probably one of the few that actually still have a 360 that works. Yeah. Although that is like my third 360, which says a lot.
It does, yeah. Yeah, my PlayStation 3 almost takes off every time I put it on. PlayStation 4 is getting that way. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't have any more questions. I just wanted to talk about destruction and destruction of zeitgeist and timings and when a video game or system disappears and becomes unplayable.
Becomes unplayable. Very good. And I had a question for you on the theme of destruction.
Okay.
So... thinking about destruction, most video games have destruction as a central premise. Either you have to destroy or something is being destroyed and you have to kind of intervene. Do you think it's necessarily negative, or does it say something about video games that destruction is such a core theme to so many of them generally?
So in thinking about this, like, when we play video games that are about destruction, and the first ones that pop into mind are things like Final Fantasy or Tales of Vesperia. A lot of RPGs are the world is going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And you are a hero preventing that world being destroyed. And it usually has, like, a very thinly veiled message about, you know, ecology and things like that. Not ecology, what's the word I'm looking for?
Climate change?
Yeah, something like that. The apocalypse. I don't know, I think... what that does is it puts you very squarely in I am the hero shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a, like, it would, I mean, as much as you have talked about, like, playing a game where you are the NPC, I think games like that where you get to feel and be the hero are necessary, and therefore you have to have something equally or antithesis, antithesis, oh god,
Antithetical?
Antithetical to the villain to your hero.
Yeah.
You know. And that, so yeah.
Sorry, Garen.
And they're usually like, oh, I want to destroy the world, or I want to destroy X. So you have to preserve it.
But, so destruction as a big threat is a common theme. But then also in many, many games, which is probably the more the destruction I was thinking about, the answer to that is destruction. It is destroy 10,000 moblins on your way to stopping the world from being destroyed.
Yeah.
Destroy the enemy base, destroy the enemy faction, destroy the infrastructure. I mean, one of my favorite bittersweet games is Little King's Story, where I'm sure I said this before on the podcast. It starts out and you've got this, you know, beautiful kind of nursery rhyme, classical music.
And then you have the David Mitchell moment.
Yeah. Yeah, where, you know, you kind of beat the first kingdom of the bad guys, and then you kind of build your... And then as you go on, you just get this sinking feeling of, oh, I'm genociding. I am erasing everyone but my people from this continent. That is destructive. So it's creative, you're saving, but it's destructive. Do you think that's inevitable because of how humans are hardwired? But it does make me feel a little bit icky. And although, yeah, you know, we have games where that's not necessarily the case, but we have special words for them. We call them walking simulators or cozy games. And there's still a sense that those aren't games proper. You know, those are different games. But the kind of lingua franca across many, 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 not all video games is... You are blowing something up, you're shooting in its face, you're driving into it, you are destroying.
Yeah, you are getting an achievement for killing 1 million zombies.
You're driving up and down the underground car park. Death so thick that the windscreen wipers can barely keep up.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting point. And like, even down to like Pac-Man or Mario...
Yeah, Crash Bandicoot, you know, just destruction.
Zelda, you just walk into people's houses and destroy their vases and just steal
their
rupees.
Saving the world. Kick the shit out of your personal belongings. Steal every money, bit of money you have in the house.
Yeah. And it's even worse when you don't have the motivation. You're just, oh, this guy's a bad guy. Okay. Is he? Yeah. So he's just like, what is Koopa doing? You know?
Yeah.
King Koopa. Boo, Bowser. Bowser, of course. Yeah, like, he's kidnapped the princess.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Does that justify the death of 4,000 Wigglers, 15,000 Goombas?
Yes. I mean, that's the thing. Mind you, as we all know, if you walk off the screen and come back... they can return.
Or is it just a new one? Can you double the death?
Yeah. And then you've got these, I'm thinking of like Vampire Survivors now. Mm-hmm. The reverse bullet hells.
Mm.
Where you're killing so many things that it is testing the limits of the hardware you're playing it on.
Yeah.
There's so much going on the screen. That's insane. Yeah, no, like, I don't know what that is. Maybe it's because you just can't do that in real life. It's part of that escapism. Maybe there is a twisted little part inside human hardwiring where it's just like, you know what, there's a stack of boxes there. I would love to kick that over and just see it fall down. But I won't do that because I'm a member of society. Yeah, no.
Yeah, thankfully I can live out my crate kicking the shit out of dreams in many a video game.
Yeah.
I do think it's strange that so much is based on combat and death and fighting to the point where, you know, we've all been there when you're trying to, you know, say that, oh yeah, I, you know, play video games, and no, it's not just, you know, that childish stuff you might remember, and then it's really hard to kind of find a rec or recommend to someone who you know you see outside beyond gaming as a well-adjusted person that isn't this, oh yeah, this is the bit where you
I remember I remember somebody talking about World of Warcraft, sorry, I'm just going to mention very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And they were just talking about, oh yeah, yeah, you can do loads in that game. You can do professions, you can level up skills, there's a little Pokemon game in it, yeah. There's, you know, all of this, and there's a great heavy tech, you know, quest line. Like, all right, okay, cool. That's a lot of things. All of which are just sub-games of killing things over and over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah. You know, some people get married in this game. Some people form like lifelong bonds, yeah, 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 and guilds. Okay. And then, you know, flash to 2 seconds of your typical WoW video and it's just smacking things in the head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, look at me gather up all of these boars and kill them so efficiently with my character.
Yeah, it is kind of perverse.
Yeah.
When you think about it for like more than 2 seconds, just how central destruction is to the language of video games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Middle of the podcast.
It's the very last break time.
Skibby dabby dibby doo.
Break time. I don't know why we do the jingle and then put the jingle in, but.
Break time. Okay, and what happens in the middle of the podcast, Farley?
Well, when we were between the D and the S. We have a break time where we ask each other 2 questions, 1 card from the ultimate video game trivia card game trivia game thing.
Yes, we do. So I'm gonna get you a question. I'm going to ask it now. Great fun. Narrate everything, Richie. Published by Square Enix, which 2018 role-playing game features 8 playable protagonists?
Ooh, Octopath Traveler.
Well done. Ding, ding, ding. Nailed it.
Have you played any of those? I think they're called, are they called Pixel Remasters?
Yes.
They're all in that same style. You know, there's Triangle Strategy, but then there's also some older games which they've done. And they look fucking gorgeous.
And they're huge.
I've ever done is played a demo of every single one. Thought, oh my god, this is so beautiful. I don't have time for this.
Yeah, I know. I'm exactly the same. So the Versus series, and I believe Octopath Traveler is somehow involved with them as well.
Oh yeah.
They started way back in like 2005, and there is now because I actually still have on wishlist. What is it? Tales or something, I can't remember what it was. Anyway, I still have them wishlisted, but I now know that there is like 9 sequels to it, which is just like, it's like deciding you suddenly want to watch One Piece and finding out there's 1,000 episodes and just like, no, that's how much time this would be investing, you know.
So what they called Final Fantasy Versus?
No, it's just Versus, the Versus series.
Versus Square Enix. By Square
Enix? No, it's not Square Enix. No.
Okay.
Hang on, look. You tell me. Versus? I'll find it.
Let's do that. It's a bad thing to Google. The Typhon, or a hostile alien race in which video game? Tough, this is tough.
Typhon?
Yeah, Typhon.
Is it a space shooter?
Yes.
Mass Effect?
No.
Oh.
It's kind of a classic shooter that gets revisited every now and then. For a while, I think. It was like a PC benchmark game, I think.
Oh, Crisis?
No.
Okay.
For a while, there was like another one. Ask me some more questions.
Right, another one, and it was a spacey one. Is it? What are the words? How many words are in the title?
One.
What? Oh God. It's not Halo. That'd be too obvious. Spacey shootery game. I don't know.
Weird. You know that Aliens have a antagonist series?
The Aliens?
You know Aliens, the movies?
Yeah.
There's an accompanying series of movies.
So the Prometheus ones?
No, where they sometimes have crossovers.
Predator?
Uh-huh.
Prey.
Yes, Prey.
Okay, yeah, Prey. Okay, cool, thanks. I got there. Nailed it.
First time. I thought Prey was a series. What am I getting confused with?
I don't know.
Is it just a one-off?
I don't know. I know nothing about this.
I thought it was a series. Okay. All right. I thought it was one where he plays like a Native American guy who gets sucked off in space. Sucked up in space.
This is a special game.
What game is that?
I don't know.
This is awful content. Okay.
This is really awful.
Prey. Two old men struggled to remember games they didn't play.
That's that guy's a maniac.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So my question?
Yes, please.
Oh dear.
Yeah, you've got an idea one. Number two. Yeah.
No, this isn't an oh dear, this is oh dear, it's rubbish and stupidly easy. What is the name of the fantasy world in which the Legend of Zelda series is primarily set?
Ging, ging, galilila, ging. Well, I don't know, is it Hyrule? Is it Hyrule?
Yes, it's Hyrule.
Yay.
Yay. Nailed it.
Kidding. Now, which developer made arguably the greatest game of all time that I haven't played, and I don't think you have either? Disco Elysium.
Disco Elysium?
Yeah.
I don't know the name of the developer at all, but I own it.
Have you played it?
No. Apparently, it's very similar to like Baldur's Gate mechanics.
Apparently, it's one of the best games ever.
Yeah.
Widely, you know, people saying if you've not played Disco Elysium, you should play Disco Elysium.
Yeah.
And that's why I've not touched it, everyone.
Yeah. Everybody, it says it's great. Therefore, I have to live in my own little hipster niche.
How dare you? How do you dare you know what I might like just because so many of you think it's the best game ever? Okay, how am I going to describe this to you? You're never going to get this. There's no way to get to it.
Okay.
It's four letters with a forward slash in between. So the... Fine.
Is it ZA/UM?
Yes, yay, well done.
Yay. Zam.
What a guess.
Yes, such a guess.
Zam.
So those games, the pixel RPGs, I do not have on my wish list anymore.
Oh, which means... Just, is that Pantsu Fighter? Is that...
Pantsu Fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all I have on my
your wish list. It's really Pantsu Fighter 2 as well.
Pantsu Fighter 8, man.
Eight?
Yeah. No. I have no idea. Is there a Pantsu Fighter? Probably. Let's not look it up.
Look it up. What's he look the other thing up? Pantsu Fighter. series.
Yeah, yeah, it's both of us looking stuff up at the same time. Great.
There's another Wikipedia page. That means nothing to me.
This means nothing to me.
Vianetta.
Vianetta. Right. Is that break time over? No. Yes. Yes. Yes, it is.
Did you ask me to? You did.
Yeah, I did the Hyrule one. And
well, there we go.
Yeah.
It's the end of break time. I feel a bit sad, but I like break time.
Yeah.
It's my second favourite gimmick of all of our gimmicks.
Yeah. It's all gone. What was the first favourite?
I like the adverts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Richie. The S is sequence.
Oh.
Do you have anything to kick us off, or should I kick us off again?
You kick us off.
So, you can interpret sequence in a number of different ways. One of which...
A number of different ways.
One of which is a very mechanical way, which we'll probably get around to. But the other, the one I wanted to talk about was how games kind of build sequences in the loosest sense of the term. You know, things which are united or related to each other. So in video games, a lot of that is to do with prequels, sequels, remakes, spin-offs. But I was thinking about memorable sequences in video games, particularly because with some of the remakes we've been playing recently, so the Resident Evil 3 remake, the Tomb Raider remakes which I've been playing, those sequences, you know, I couldn't, if you asked me to write out what happens in those games, I'd get the broad themes, but I wouldn't really, you know, it wouldn't capture every element of it. There'd be huge chunks that I've forgotten. But when you're playing it, it's kind of a useless superpower, right? So like 60 seconds before something happens, I know that it happens. But I couldn't write it out. And so what do you think it is? My question is, what do you think it is that builds a memorable sequence? Because I definitely feel like there's less that's memorable about video games these days in terms of sequences, whereas with Final Fantasy, Tomb Raider, the Resident Evil 3, even though they are remasters and something different is happening, I love those sequences and those stories. Is it just that we had all the time in the world in 1998?
I think so. So when, and probably a very good example of this would be Resident Evil 3.
Yeah.
Which is so massively different from the PS1 Resident Evil 3. I mean, it's set in the same place. It has the same protagonist. You do not go to the same places. You do not see the same people. The whole thing with Nemesis is massively different. Mm-hmm. And I feel like where the city was huge in Resident Evil 3, it wasn't in Resident Evil 3 Remaster. I also think... I don't remember the remaster version very well. So there definitely was... I think it also, yeah, I think it's all the time in the world, unfortunately. And I think that's basically because we did play things to death as well. So with Remaster, I have played through it once. Alright, okay, cool. And it'll slowly fade from my memory. And in about 2 years' time, I could go back and play Resident Evil 3 Remaster and be like, no way, I've forgotten all about this. You know, I don't know. I think because we had Resident Evil 2 and it was like one of maybe the 7 games you had, we just played it over and over and over and over and over. And I played it in different systems over and over and over. You know, it was... That's why I think those sequences have become ingrained almost in the neurons, way more so than, I guess, something which shouldn't be as throwaway. prettier and nicer.
Well, I do think exposure has something to do with it. So as per my New Year's resolution, I've been trying to get through Horizon Zero Dawn. I do like that game, but it's too big, right? And so this weekend, in fact, my eye is bloodshot today because I probably played it too much. I put concerted effort into it over the course of 2 days, and I was struck by how the story unfolds. So I probably, when I started making this concerted effort, it was probably in the back third of the game, and then now I'm pretty near the end. I was struck at how brilliant I thought the story was, and how it was relayed to you through, of course, audio files and cutscenes and da, da, da. And I was thinking, which made me think about this word sequence, I was thinking, when was the last time a game hit me with that in a way that, you know, I was thinking about the story and its themes. But if I'd continued playing Horizon Zero Dawn as I did the first two-thirds, where it's months between play sessions.
Yeah.
Months. Just, you know, that nuance, just you lose it, or you don't pick up in the first place. And so maybe it is partly exposure, so how much time you put into something in one continuous block. And that's definitely perhaps the case for the Resident Evil 3 remakes with me, because they were so short and I replayed them a lot. Plus it was, you know, inspired from another game which I like and spend a lot of time with. But it does make me a bit remorseful, a bit sad about the many, many games we have available to us whose brilliant storylines are just broken apart by the fact that, you know, you might play 3 hours every 3 weeks. And we talked about it recently with one of the Final Fantasy, I think it was Final Fantasy 3. We had a DS episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, stuck outside that village. Don't know where I was going to. Don't know where I came from.
both of us. Both of us, exactly the same place. Yeah.
If somebody said, oh, you know, Final Fantasy 3 is my favorite Final Fantasy because of the story, I couldn't even tell you what the threat is. Is it a crystal? I don't know. Is it a dragon? A king? Well, I've no idea.
Yeah.
And so perhaps is the length of games these days as well, with games as a service, open world, DLC. Maybe there's just no chance for them to get ingrained. Years and years ago, maybe I can dig this out. I emailed a bunch of video game journalists to say, tell me what the story of Halo is, right? Because I played all the Halos on launch. I've got a bunch of the books over there, which I've read all the way through, but I can't keep the story of Halo in my mind, right? Yes, there's a Halo and a Swarm and the Covenant, but what happens in 1 and 2 and 3 and ODST and blah, 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 I just can't keep it in my mind. And I was amazed that these journalists, I think pretty, because they've responded pretty quickly, most of them, off the top of their head, just could recall in so much detail the beats of the story. I have no memory of that. You know, I played through them while I was there, but I couldn't stitch it together in the way that they did. So maybe it's just a different, it made me think at the time, maybe as a games journalist you have a different mind for these things, or you're playing games in a specific way. But yeah, I just found that I didn't particularly engage with the fiction in that way.
I couldn't tell you a thing about Halo. I played Halo 3 with you, famously.
Yeah.
Famously. Team TGAM. That is pretty much most of my interaction with...
with Halo?
Yeah.
Okay, what would you say was... When I say memorable sequence, what's the last game you can think of where... the game was memorable in that you were thinking about the themes or the story or the universe specifically?
Oh gosh, that's a tough one.
It is, right? With all these hours we spend playing games, we spend a lot talking about games, we've been reviewing games, speculating about games, hyping games.
Like, It also depends, like, so I played, I think one of the ones that pops to mind is probably, rather trite, is the Cult of Lamb one.
Oh, yeah.
And the story wasn't there, but it was probably the sequence of realizing that this is a weird building sim thing, and then in between doing the building sim, I go out and I do a sort of hack and slash, like Zelda, the SNES Zelda, against enemies, and certain things that I do in the village can. And I think it was the whole thing about you being a sacrificial lamb and you being a avatar of a god. And of course, it's silly and cutesy at the same time.
Yeah.
And then just discovering how the game works and then getting into the loop.
Uh-huh.
I think that sequence was like, oh, this is a good game because it introduced me at the right pace.
Yeah.
At the right speed and at the right sort of intrigue level. So I think I don't remember the sequence, but I remember appreciating the sequence or appreciating it for the mechanics and how they did it. Is that is that good? Is that a thing?
No, it is. Yeah, you can have respect for you know, we've said and many people say about the games can be so compelling, and I'm sure different parts of the brain fire off when you're trying to work out how a game works. And then when you do, that can fade into okay, well, I'm done with it, or that can fade into getting stuck into these loops.
The onboarding process. Do you know what's another good one? Like,
to finish with Cult of the Lamb, there are games where when it clicks, you go, oh, good one, you got me there. You've onboarded. You've onboarded me, but you know
you've
you've got the tendrils in. You've perfectly played that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, you were gonna say.
But talking of sequences and similar ones, so I think I was also talking to you about Escape Academy, the escape room game.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That game has zero replayability.
Uh-huh.
It's very, very weird. So some of the levels are like half an hour, okay, and you'll scramble around as you would in an escape room, and then you're given a score at the end, or you just don't solve it in time and you get a timeout. You're like, oh shit, crap. And that happened once, like, we just could not work out what the final puzzle was, and then time just went out. Now you have the option of adding 5 on and losing your score, but at that point I was just so frustrated, like, nah, not doing it. But came back to it, but because I knew every single thing to do, the sequence of how to do these things, I literally did everything in about 3 minutes and had a full 27 minutes left in the thing to work out the last. And that it's just kind of like, that's where that replayability is just gone. It's just like, it's like, it is a throwaway game almost. Uh-huh. It's odd, but yeah, just a tangent on sequences.
You've reminded me of it, and there are getting on to perhaps more mechanical sequences. And think about button combination presses. So I was thinking about International Track and Field. Right, where you're mash. There was a particularly good game in the original Sonic and Mario Olympic games, which was the trampolining. Did we ever play that together? We might have done once or twice.
I know, I've never played Mario and Olympics.
Okay, so the trampolining is you bounce and then you get like 4 buttons will appear on the screen and you have 3 seconds to press them. Then you bounce and it goes up to 6, and then you bounce and it goes up to 8. So it's this horrible, like, anxiety-inducing, because you have literal seconds to try and hit a, you know, a sequence of whatever it might be: square, square, X, circle, triangle, triangle, square, X. But there's something where, and playing through Final Fantasy VII Remake, made me remember this. So hopefully not spoiling things. Where are you up to in Remake?
I just got Aerith, and we are in the Sector 5 slums, just visited our mum.
Okay. All right. Well, in the Final Fantasy VII, the original, there's a point where you have to do a mini game. Oh, it's when you're trying to get all this stuff to dress up.
Yes.
And you have to do that horrible squats.
Yes, yes.
And so you try to do it first time, and you're like, this is fucking impossible. This is actually impossible. I can't, you know, just this is rubbish. And it's like, do you want to try again? You go again.
Yeah.
And just by repeating something, you get better.
Yep.
Until, you know, what your first attempt, and then the attempt where you really are, you know, trying to go hell for leather and beat it and get a world record or whatever, is so different. And I love to understand what goes on in the because it is, you know, a very simple thing. I can't remember what it's like, pressing three buttons on the, in Final Fantasy VII, isn't it? Or it's two. It's like, squat, arms, up. Squat, arms, arms.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's. I was thinking about those kinds of sequences. Thoughts?
I don't generally like quick time events. Like that trampoline thing sounds like absolute hell to me.
Just think of it as a fighter. And it's a combo.
Yeah, no, exactly.
No combos, QTEs?
I mean, you could say that, except you're reacting differently. So you're reacting to your opponent's move. Yeah, no. It's not a QTE. The QTE is just a boring AI. Hey, press this button.
But then surely that's what you're doing in fighting games. Putting off a string of QTEs. You know, in fact, you know, that's how games like Killer Instinct work, right?
If you're doing Killer Instinct, yes, and you're aiming to do the 64, blah, blah,
no,
blah.
Not even that. Just but your bread and butter is like these three QTEs are your openers, right?
Yeah, but there's so many. Like, if you play any, but okay, so certain characters will have. No, I disagree. Like, if you're playing as Jago or you're playing as Spinal, your opener is going to be different, and it also might be like a forward and X, and but you also have the ability to see that your opponent's maybe attacking you from above, and therefore you're going to do a different opener. Where you counter them and things like that. I think the whole idea of countering and being able to change the way you're attacking them takes it away from being a QTE. At least in my opinion.
Well, you have mini. Well, the point is that what you're doing in a fighting game is way, way, way more stressful than the Sonic and Mario games trampoline game. But because of the framing, it's the other way around, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you don't think, you know, I don't know, maybe some people do, but when I'm playing a fighting game, I'm not thinking like, you know, I'm not visualizing the buttons in my head before I do them.
No.
And in fact, if you get caught up trying to do that, then it's impossible.
Yeah. Which one's block? Oh, damn it.
Looking down at the buttons. To,
yeah.
It just becomes, you know, built in, I guess. So that's the more mechanical end of sequences, I guess.
Yeah, well, and speaking of mechanical sequences, the one thing that I wanted to talk about was another set of button presses.
Uh-huh.
And that would be... cheat codes.
You fucking love cheat codes.
You big cheat boy. And actually, on the same note, so Killer Instinct was just released on the Nintendo Switch Online, the old SNES one.
Yeah, it was.
What's that noise for?
So happy.
Have you played it?
No. I need to, you know, sit down with the SNES controller and properly get back into it.
So I played it for about 2 minutes, uh-huh. and I was like, oh crap, I remember nothing. I couldn't even get a cinder combo off.
Oh Christ, okay.
And I was like, oh my god, how does he do his fireball? Is it forward, or is it roll forward, or is it charge back and forward? Oh my god. And I tried all of them and he didn't do it, and then I was like, is it punch or is it kick? Oh my god. I was just so lost, and then Spinal killed me. And, all right, okay. So yeah, I've completely lost it with Killer Instinct, and it made me a bit sad. But at the same time, I was remembering all of the crazy stuff, and especially from the days of the SNES, the stupid, nutty, like, cheat codes that you used to have to put in. So for
because in Killer Instinct you do it on the versus screen, don't you?
Yeah, but also for the idle cheat, you had to do that. You highlight Jago, and then you put in a whole sequence. It ends up on Cinder.
Yeah.
And then you'll hear idle.
Yeah.
And then you click it, and then you get to play it as idle in the actual story mode. But I think everything just looks like Cinder, so like the end sequence just ends up being Cinder.
Okay.
I don't
think you ever finished it, because although we knew how to unlock Idol, I don't think we knew any of Idol's moveset. I don't know if he has much.
If I remember, he was just ridiculously OP.
Okay.
It's like, once you know how to do like his big club up in the air thing,
yeah.
It was just literally cheese.
Okay.
Or my memory of that might be different, because I do remember being good at that game. And yeah, it feels a bit like, oh my god, I'm a 40-year-old man, and I don't even remember how to do Cinder's special move. Special moves, not even special.
Just his moves. Just yeah. His general moves.
Yeah.
I wonder if there are young gamers out there who are playing these games as they come out. Like, oh, Killer Instinct. This is the game that my granddad goes on about.
Oh, my God.
What the hell?
Well, no, you get those videos of kids who are being shown a PS1. Uh-huh. And all they do is like, why can't I skip this cutscene?
Yeah, and lose it at loading screens.
Yeah. Why is it so slow?
Yeah.
Like, oh, God.
Why is this CD? A, what is a CD?
Yeah,
B,
yeah.
Why is this CD spinning around in the bottom corner for 5 minutes every time I go through a door?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Killer Instinct reminded me of all of that sort of stuff. And, of course, the combos you have to put in, which is a nice sort of point in that. There's also the Sonic 2 cheat code. Do you remember this?
With the debug menu?
Yeah, so it's like you go to the music menu and you do certain things, and then you get to the debug menu, and then there's an extra debug menu and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you're able to like, put... It was so detailed. It was so crazy, the stuff that you could do. Just turning yourself into like the checkpoint posts, and you could make several thousand on the screen and stuff like that.
Can't you also? Isn't there a sequence? Can't you play Mario in a way that essentially remodels the code?
Yes. So there is literally pixels you have to get right, and it will crash the game or take you into a certain menu behind it, and it's the opening level, and you have to just do things in a certain sequence, pixel perfect, and it just somehow brings the whole game down, which is just nuts. You're essentially writing the code by using the controller.
It's mad, isn't it?
It is so mad. It's a whole different world. Like people who do coding nowadays, you know, like they're using curly brackets and like say go to next line and stuff like that, or go and fetch an API and then they'll read API documentation. Fine, great. But these guys, they were thinking in ones and zeros, man.
And they had 45k to put a whole game.
I know. Like, not to belittle what development is today.
Yeah.
It's just what development was then. It's just alien, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just amazed because, you know, even though some of those games are fucking awful, we just said perhaps they don't all deserve to be preserved. That we got we got any of them is, I think, a fucking miracle.
Yeah, and like the code wasn't even like written code. It's not like built into some kind of, you know, OS or something like that. It is, hey, these are ones and zeros on a chipboard.
Yeah,
you know, that's crazy, absolutely nuts. But yeah, wow, really, really digressed. I can't think of any other big cheat codes.
There's the Konami code.
What's the Konami code?
I don't know. I always get it mixed up with the Sonic 1 cheat, which is up, down, left, right, A, B, C, start.
Oh my god. What have you done?
Oh no.
Oh god.
Oh, not this again.
Well, there we go. That's one way to set fire to the towers. That guy's towers, right? Well, bye-bye season 4.
DS towers. Yeah, oh god, well... But I wanted to save some of these gimmicks. I guess you have to report to the bottom platform.
Yeah, off to the bottom platform. See you in season 5.
See you in season 5. Richie, before the sprinklers go off, we've got one more thing. Is it a question? It's not a question. That guy's a maniac.
Why'd he bite me?
DS.
Game over.